Our guest has now arrived.
Oh, thank you. Talking about me pitching in high school.
Adam Jones also pitching in high school?
He did. He did. I remember.
Yeah. Adam, how are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you doing? Where are you at?
I'm in the studio today, staying warm, and you're going to find out why I'm in the studio when you start freezing in a minute.
I'm not cold. This weather here is beautiful to me. I don't know why people think it's chilly.
I mean, I guess you did come from Baltimore where it was real
cold. This is home, man. This is where this weather is terrific.
That's absolutely. Absolutely.
Anything over 75, 76, 79, I'm too hot. Tired of sweating.
Now, Adam, why did you, was it just due for a day off yesterday, or they just wanted to give you a chance to go see all your friends in San Diego?
I think it was due. We played three on turf in Tampa the previous trip. Played all, maybe not one. We had a 10-game homestand. I think I played 9 out of 10 or maybe 10 out of 10 of those games. I think 9 out of 10. And I think just to give my legs a break, that turf has been crushing us. And we've been doing a lot of work. We've been playing hard. So just to get a little breather was not bad. But you know I don't want a breather at home.
I just thought about this. You said that to me yesterday about turf. And I'm like, where were you at in turf? And you guys have turf at home now. I totally forgot about that. You guys came into the season, Adam, as supposedly a rebuilding team, but you guys have been much more than that this season. And what's it been like in the clubhouse? What is it in that clubhouse that makes you guys so competitive?
Well, I came into the situation not knowing no philosophy. Right. I came here mid March, not knowing what any sort of philosophy they got going. I didn't know what if they were rebuilding, if they were going forward. I had no idea because I just didn't know the situation. When I got here, I just looked up more and more of the roster, and I was like, this team can play.
Yeah.
This team can hit. And obviously, I follow baseball, a lot of baseball. I definitely watch a lot of National League West baseball. And I got to just know the guys. I'm like, these guys can play. And, you know, you look at this division, it's open division. The Dodgers are good. They're not as good as they were in the previous years, I don't think. But I think they're obviously the team to dethrone. They've been to the World Series the last 2 years. You can't just say they ain't that good.
Right.
You know what I mean? They ain't that good. But I just got here, and I just, you know, my mindset is I was here in Baltimore for 11 years. 10 of those years we were picked to finish last. 1 year we were picked to finish fourth. Only finished last once out of 11 years.
Okay.
Who you going to tell me how we going to finish? You going to tell me how we going to finish? We'll tell you how we finish. So that's how, you know, when I just signed here, I'm just like, hey, guys, let's go out and have some fun. Like, I'm not this leader of this team. I'm just a guy who's going to implement his style of play, and the guys, they seem to – gravitate towards it. I just play the game hard, try to play it right, have fun. And right now it's been going good. Obviously we're, you know, in a little skid right now, but we're still having fun.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the thing. So we come out tonight and just have some fun and get a W.
Adam Jones is with us now with the Arizona Diamondbacks. Of course, last time he was on our show, he was in the unemployment line, and none of us could believe that. Tell us exactly kind of how it all finally came to pass that you got to Arizona, Adam. How did the story go?
Well, I was just out in Arizona. Me and my wife and kids, we just decided once spring training started, like, let's just go to Arizona, be around a bunch of baseball people in general, and be around a bunch of other unsigned dudes. basically, so it's just a group of us. Everybody's at spring training from 9 to 3. We just over there, just, you know, our kids going and playing around, having lunch and stuff like that. But we, you know, just we all worked out. We kept our bodies in shape. And, you know, we wanted the opportunity to play. So the Diamondbacks gave me a call and was like, hey, we want to see you work out. I was working out at Grand Canyon University. And they asked me, can they come see you? I was like, man, I don't give a damn who come see me. Just somebody come see me.
Anybody.
Yeah, yeah, somebody. Send somebody. Send a little pigeon. I don't care. So they came and we talked for, you know, I just did my normal thing. And they came and we talked for about 30 minutes afterwards. And 2 days later, they called my agent and said, hey, let's get something done. And, you know, I just wanted the opportunity to play. It's not to me, it wasn't really about the money. I mean, some dudes like, man, you're only making $3 million. I looked at him and was like, damn, that's terrible.
It's really a shame, yeah.
Woo! That's just terrible. But obviously, you look at it coming from one number to another number, but the money wasn't the factor to me. The factor was, I know I got a lot of game left.
Yeah.
After this, not just this year, but after this year and after the following year. And I get this new analytical stuff, but you can't tell me I can't play. You can't.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? And you can't tell me my body of work, knock on wood, has not been suitable for this game. And, you know, you see other people get contracts. And when I seen Kutch get his deal, I'm like, yeah, biting at the lips. Because Kutch obviously is one of the more elite players, especially in the age as we get older. And I'm just like, okay, you know, there's not much difference in that. He walks more, but there's not much difference. And then just nothing. So it's like, hey, it humbled the hell out of me. I think, and just in a different way. Obviously, I was so used to being in one place, this, every day, the way I want it. Now it's like, it ain't the way I want it.
Right.
And it's actually kind of cool. Yeah, there ain't no pressure on me no more.
Adam, you spent all of your career prior to this year in the American League. How has the transition been to the National League? Is there a difference at all? I know there used to be. Is that difference kind of non-existent anymore?
Nah, there's a big difference. The lineup changes every day. I think that goes both sides, too, because, you know, we go play Tampa, you throw a lefty, the lineup is different, you play a righty. Baltimore was great because we had just a lineup.
Every day.
Boom.
Yeah.
Here's a lineup. So it made, that's why we're good, I think, because we just
have continuity
there.
We
had stability. Yeah, yeah. When the Yankees and Red Sox are going good, their lineup is just like, boom. It is what it is. With the National League, you know, that word day off
is real. Huh?
Ain't no day off, brother. Ain't no day off. You're going, because you got the pitcher hitting. So
right.
At some point in time, I guess you had day off, but comes sixth, seventh inning, I know that, especially in a one run game, what's
going
on?
You gotta get loose.
I'm loose. I'm ready to go. Just like I was ready to go to face Yates last night, but he had a 1-2-3. So, you know, I think, you know, in National League, you just have to be prepared more. American League, you got day off, you got day off. Yeah, ain't no double switches. It's a pinch hitter for that guy. He going in for him. It's cut and dry.
Right.
Over there. But here, it's a little more strategical in terms of personnel. You see players, you know, like we got four catchers, actually. But two of the catchers can play multiple positions. I think Avila could probably play first if need be. You know, Carson, we put him at third the other day. So I think it just offers more versatility for position players, especially for the catchers, with Swihart, who can play catch first in the outfield. So it's different. Everything's different, man.
Yeah.
And it's cool, though, because, you know, I was so used to one thing now. I'm embracing the change.
Adam Jones is with us. We are so happy to have him with us. The great Morse High product, San Diegan, now in his 13th Major League season. Adam, of course, Machado's across the field from you now. You played with him, I don't know how many years in Baltimore, 6, 7, 8 years. How long did it take before he started making plays that you stopped going, oh my goodness? Because we do it every night now, getting to see him on a daily basis, and just the effortlessness with which he makes plays. Did you ever get over that, watching him from the outfield do that kind of stuff?
Before I answer that, I just want to say that Morris High School is playing Calvary Christian right now in the playoffs.
Go Tigers!
Get that in
there.
Get
Morris
the Tigers
playing.
In there.
They're playing right now, Calvary Christian. Let's go Tigers! Beat
go
that
Tigers!
See y'all.
Yeah.
See y'all Saturday in that CIF.
There you go.
You know what I mean? But with Machado, the thing, like I said this time and time again, is if you look at him, you know, and most times when people make great plays, you look at their reaction, and most of the times the reaction is like, oh, my God, I just made a sick play. Wow, I really just do that. No, I didn't do that. But with him, I'm telling you, you look at his face, he makes a sick play, and it's just like, mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah.
I was watching one of y'all games, and I think the best play he made this year, he was safe, though. It was a ball, got by the third baseman. He dove way in the hole short. Dude was safe at first, though.
Right.
I think that was the best play I ever seen him make.
Yeah, seriously. I remember that.
He's been making them like that daily, it seems like.
And you don't really get to you get to appreciate him more when you watch him on a daily basis. He works his tail off. He got hands out this world. I mean, but he positions himself. He gets a good jump. And the biggest factor is he's long.
Yeah.
He got really, really long arms. He got them basketball arms. And he's 6'3", 6'4".
Right.
So with long arms, long legs, when he reaches for that ball, especially up the middle, it's like you wouldn't think he had it. And then he gets the balls that just other guys don't because of his length.
Go gadget arms.
Man.
One of the cool things I think about changing teams is you get a chance to see guys work and a little bit differently. And for you especially, you've been in the same place. Talk a little bit about David Peralta.
Yeah.
I've been very impressed with him over the last couple of years. This year he seems to be taking it to another level.
You have.
What is it about his game that impresses you?
The consistency. Like, I got here and I knew of him. I watched a lot of NL West baseball, so I knew of him. I ain't know how good this dude is. Like, really, I mean, his BP, his preparation, he takes it serious. In BP, I swear to you, he hits the ball hard every time. He hits the ball left field, left center, like a right-hand hitter. Mm. Just murders the ball. But he works. And I got to talk to him, obviously, we're a little older, so, you know, of his pitching background, of him, you know, grinding himself through the minors, grinding himself through independent ball after he was a pitcher. He's Venezuelan, so we talked about Venezuela and all that. And just, I've tried to, you know, incorporate myself in his routine, in his life, so he can understand that, like, hey, I'm your teammate, brother.
Right, right.
I want to be here for you. And that's one guy, when I got here, him and Marte are two guys that I won't let, like, fail. It's like you just see those guys, you're like, nah, I got to make sure. Marte, obviously, he got the five-year extension here last year, but the talent is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And this is the time now where he needs to show it. He's 26, I believe, and this is the time where he showed. He has the speed, he has all the tools. But then you go back and say, well, Peralta, he's a little older, so he gets it.
Yeah.
He understands the mentality of it. He understands the struggle of it. He understands, you know, when you're going through it, hey, just grind through it. Instead of, you know, when you're young, you know, you can – younger guys tend to pout a little bit more.
Right.
That's just how,
you know, start pouting, you start tinkering more. Yeah.
You're used to success your whole life, and then you get here and it's like, you know, it's not as good as you thought. So you start moving your hands, move this, do that. That messes you up even more.
Right.
But he's just a professional. He works, man. And it's cool to see because like I said, watching from afar, you don't really get to see how hard these guys work. And I said, well, the best part about seeing that was the WBC, and I got to see all those guys work.
Yeah.
Like, these are the stars of the game. They show up early. They put in their work. They put in their time. That's why they yield the results between the lines. But with DP, man, I need to see him in that All-Star game. He's worked his tail off for coming from a pitcher to a hitter. Most people go from a hitter to a pitcher. So
right.
I'm going to keep pushing him because, you know, he's a hell of a player, hell of a talent, great guy, but I just see that there's just something there that's very, very special, and I want to try and maximize his potential in this game.
Yeah, that's all we need to hear is that Adam Jones is making all the rest of the Arizona Diamondback players better because they're already
trying, man, slowly.
They're already pretty good. And speaking of pitchers that can hit, Greinke's pitching tonight for you guys, and I know it's a smaller sample size. You're having a career. Your OPS, I don't know if you're aware, 834 at the moment is the highest of your career. So congrats on that.
I got to finish high.
You got to stay there. You will.
Yeah,
you will.
Finish.
But Zach Greinke's OPS is 1,054.
Just wearing us out, huh?
He's wearing everybody out. And I know he hit two home runs, I think, the last time he pitched here. How does a pitcher hit like him?
Watch his preparation.
Yeah,
he goes in there and watches the video, but he's watching the pitcher. He's watching the pitcher.
He's not looking at hitters.
He goes in there and look at the hitters, but he goes in there and look at the pitchers too. And he asks questions. Hey, does he like to start you with this? How's his fastball move? He got some cut?
Huh.
Is the ball getting on? He likes to ask questions. I'm like, cool. So tonight I'm leading off. He's batting ninth. So his first at bat, he's definitely gonna come talk to me. Obviously, he don't talk that much.
No.
So, hey,
no,
any
doesn't.
Words I can squeeze out of him, I'm a cherish it. So if he asks me a question, I'm going to give him the longest, driest answer I probably can so I can just keep his attention for him.
Which is the exact opposite kind of answer he would give you if you asked him a question. It's usually short to the point. Real quick before we let you get out of here, do you mind the difference? I mean, we've seen you hit leadoff. We've seen you hit fourth. Is there a preference?
No. I want at bats.
I heard that.
I don't care. But leading off, I get five at bats.
You get more.
Yeah, I'm guaranteed them five. Hitting fourth, I'm guaranteed four.
Okay.
With that possibility of the fifth. So, hey, I just want at bats. It doesn't change how the pitcher's going to pitch me. Maybe the first time, maybe the first pitch of the game. That's about it. Fourth, obviously, you have the top. You got the top of the lineup on base. Lead off, you have the bottom lineup on base. If you hit the ball in the gap, they all can score.
Right.
So it doesn't
really
matter. Yeah.
Do your thing. Adam Jones has been doing it for 13 years, and once again this season to the happy delight of the Arizona Diamondbacks. Adam, thanks so much for spending some time with us. As always, we look forward to catching up with you later in the year, man. You are a true friend of the show, man. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. This view is nice up here, too.
It is. It's very nice.
You cold yet?
Nope.
Still not cold. All right.
Not even close.
All right. We are wimps then, Tony. Can
yeah.
I say?
I guess it's official.
It's
I'm
official.
Up here in a bomber right now in a beanie, so y'all know how I feel about this weather.
I know. All right. Adam Jones right there from the Arizona Diamondbacks.
Sometimes there's just not enough time in the day to talk all the sports we want.
I feel reborn. I'm like a phoenix.
Settle in and saddle up. The Big Five starts now on 97.3 The Fan.
You know, directly across from Tony and I's eyesight here at the park is the clock. And the temperature. And it does not feel like 62 degrees in this.
Not in here, it doesn't.
No, it doesn't. But there's another thing I wanted to bring up real quick because I thought this was kind of fun. I looked this up the other day, and if there's a starting pitcher on the opposing team, I look up what Tony has done against that starting pitcher if he faced him. So tonight is Zach Greinke for the Diamondbacks. And Tony had 7 at-bats, but you went 4-for-6 with a home run, an RBI, and a walk. Against one of the best.
No wonder he said so many nice things about him earlier, right?
And then Tony, when I told Tony this yesterday, I said, "What, you know, your history with him?" Tony goes, "Well, that doesn't count spring training."
No, I had some success against that.
You're even better in spring training. Well, you said he was a very smart pitcher, and that tells me that you were pretty good at just reading guys that did what smart pitchers are supposed to do.
I know one of the hits, I got him on a drag bunt, and Zach is really athletic. He actually made a terrific play. He got to the bag a bit quicker than I thought he was, but Prince's flip was a little slow, so I was able to get in there just in time.
Prince did you solid on that one.
Yeah, your best friend coming in nanoseconds late.
Because he knew that it wouldn't be an error on him, so he was fine.
My next hit didn't need any help, though, from him.
There you go.
I'll miss
him. That's what we like to hear.
All right. So that might become a thing. That might become a thing, but that was fun.
They won't all look like that, I can probably.
Right. Tony will more than happily do this segment if he's 4-for-6 against everybody you bring up.
Right?
All right, let's get to number 5.
Number 5.
The Buffalo Bills are doing something for the first time since 1977. That's allowing a player to wear O.J. Simpson number 32. Running back Sonoris Perry said he thought it was retired, but when he was told it wasn't, he decided he was going to choose it. Because of the 1995 murder trial, the Bills had never actually retired the number, but instead just haven't given it out to any players. So how does O.J. feel about this? Quote, whatever they do is fine with me. That's how I feel. When I played there, I tried to honor the team. Since I left, I always tried to honor the Bills. And to be honest, it's not something I think about. There's too much else going on in life, end quote.
You think?
And people are saying the NFL should actually, you know people these days, they're saying the NFL should actually remove him from the league's history completely because of what happened. So, Chris, should the NFL erase the history of O.J. Simpson because of what his name is linked to?
I don't think so. It is what it is, but he accomplished what he accomplished. He did what he did. Pictures of him running through secondaries are still fresh in my mind. So is everything else. And I think I'm smart enough to separate the two. I am surprised, though, that anybody would really even want to wear number 32 and kind of call attention to that. Although this is a whole new generation and people are driven by different things. I think the Buffalo Bills are making a mistake here. I would never have retired this number in any kind of ceremony, but I think just not making a 32 anymore probably would have been the smartest way to go here if I were the Buffalo Bills.
Tony, what do you think?
I think this would open up way too much. It's way too slippery of a slope. I mean, are we going to stop wearing Ty Cobb's number for stuff that he was involved in? I mean, there's so many avenues we can go down as far as not wearing somebody's number based on.
Nobody can wear Barry Bonds' number because
he did steroids because he was implicated in doing steroids. I mean, there's all kinds of things that we could pick and choose. That's aside from the fact that despite what most of us believe happened, he was acquitted at the end of the day.
He was not guilty.
So ultimately, I think that this is the right move for the Bills because, man, they would be opening up something that I don't think you could put the cap back on once it's open. So I think this is.
But are you a little surprised that somebody would even want to wear his number, though? Does it surprise you a little bit?
I just looked up how old he is.
You know how long ago that was for guys who coming into the league now? How old is this kid?
He's 27, so he's born. He was 4 years old when the trial happened.
Yeah, like that. He can't even begin to fathom what was really going down. He could go back and read him, but it's not the same meaning to him.
He should just watch the FX special.
He probably has at this point. But listen, there are a lot of other running backs that wore 32. You know, it's not just O.J. So
nobody else wore number 32 with a Buffalo Bills jersey. I have a sneaky suspicion that this guy, this kid, is going to hear it a little bit from time to time.
Because he's wearing the number 32?
Yeah, I do.
I agree with Chris, just because people are so petty these days.
That's stupid. I hope he wears it and runs for 3,000 yards. How about that?
Okay.
Me too. I'm picking him up on my fantasy team.
All right.
Number four.
We were on top of it last week when ESPN's Buster Olney joined the show and said the Padres could be the top destination for the Giants to trade Madison Bumgarner. Well, now everyone is talking about it, and I'm starting to see projections of what the Padres should give up. Here is Buster Olney on our show last week talking about Madison Bumgarner to the Padres.
What I'm hearing from other teams that will be involved in this market, because I just basically sent out a bunch of texts over the last few days and asked the question, hey, where do you think this is going to wind up heading? And let's face it, this is a little bit like the Machado thing back in January. It's a long-range forecast, and the feedback I'm getting the question, of course, is which team could potentially be motivated and which team has the prospects to get him. And a bunch of people were getting back, yep, Padres probably would be viewed as the early front runner. You know, the Astros may be a team involved. The Brewers have the motivation, maybe not the prospects. Other contenders might be involved. But here's another factor I think really is important for this year is that you've got a new head of baseball ops with the Giants, and Farhan Zaidi, who I think operates, sets aside all the old school feeling that you don't trade a great player within your division to a division rival. I mean, when he was working under Billy Beane in Oakland, they didn't care who they traded with. Their feeling was, look, we just want access to the best possible prospects, and we don't, you know, if it's a division rival, whatever. Our feeling is that we'd probably weaken the division rival by taking a couple of their best prospects in a trade. And so I don't think Farhan will blink at all if he feels like that the best offer he gets on Bumgarner comes from the Padres, and you guys know this. I mean, among all farm systems, in terms of depth, in terms of quality, the Padres are at a competitive disadvantage when you're talking about making trade for pitching.
There was ESPN's Buster Olney last week on the Gwynn and Chris show, and I read this morning from Bleacher Report, they're suggesting these Padres to give up for Madison Bumgarner. Now, I'm going to ask you guys, if you were A.J. Preller, would you make the trade? Tony is going first, but here are the players. Pitcher Logan Allen, outfielder Buddy Reed, and injured pitcher Anderson Espinoza for a half-season rental of Madison Bumgarner. Tony, if you were A.J. Preller, are you making that trade?
Hell no.
Stephen A. just ran through here.
I'm not making that trade. Not for a
Stephen
half a season.
A. just ran through here.
Because we have that clip of him.
Maybe if we're talking Marcus Stroman, I'm willing to give up those guys, but not for Madison.
For a half season.
For a half season, a guy who's, I think, on the backside of his career. I like the energy that Marcus Stroman brings more than I like the energy that Madison Bumgarner brings. That's just me personally, though.
Chris, are you making a trade for giving up Logan Allen, Buddy Reed, and Anderson Espinoza for Madison Bumgarner?
The only way I'm doing it is if, along with this trade, you can somehow guarantee me that the Padres will be in the World Series, and then I get to use that Madison Bumgarner. Because that Madison Bumgarner would be worth just about anything, to be honest with you. But I'm in agreement with Tony at this point. I don't think Bumgarner's best days are ahead of him. Certainly not for three, you know, very, very good prospects. Two top pitching prospects are too many to give up for a half season.
All right. Good stuff, guys. Let's move on.
Number three.
Brady under center. It's a second down and short from the five. Brady drops back, moves up, throws to the end zone. Hey! Touchdown, Patriots. He finds his go-to guy, Julian Edelman.
That was...
Why did we have to play that? Why couldn't we play a Tannehill touchdown or something?
Because he's never thrown to Julian Edelman.
Oh, because he's never thrown a touchdown. I got it. All right.
Oh, fair enough. Where you went with that. You know, I don't really like bringing up the Patriots in the Big Five. Just
yeah, come on. Come on, Scraby. It's not even football season. It's not even football season you made us have to put up with that.
I know, but this news took me by a little bit of surprise because the New England Patriots are going to keep Super Bowl 53 MVP Julian Edelman on their roster for at least the next 2 years. The Patriots announced he is signing a two-year $18 million extension that includes $12 million guaranteed and an $8 million signing bonus, Ian Rappaport reported this morning. The deal also features $2.8 million of guaranteed money in the final year of his deal, which is 2021. The new deal puts Edelman tied at 25th in the league amongst wide receivers. Other guys making $9 million this year. Get ready. John Brown of the Bills, Quincy Enunwa of the Jets, and Adam Humphries of the Titans. So, Chris, is this a fair deal for Julian Edelman, or does he deserve more money?
Are those the only four guys making at least that much, or those are just three other guys making that much?
Yeah, those are the guys he's tied with in the list.
Well, I think... No, it's not fair. He should make more than those guys. However, one of the real secrets of the success of the New England Patriots, I believe,
is
that all... No, they're not cheap, but all of their superstars are willing to play for a little cheaper than they could in order to make sure that there's enough money left over to build a great roster. I mean, that's kind of the Tom Brady way. And I think Julian Edelman probably doing pretty much the same thing here, figuring, you know, I could hold him up for $15, $16 million, but then we wouldn't be able to get any other wide receivers to help me. So I think it seems like a very friendly deal for the Patriots, but this is the way this franchise has been successful in the past.
Tony, what do you think? Do you think Julian Edelman, his new deal is fair? Does he deserve more money?
Well, I think it's fair. I mean, Julian Edelman... he makes big catches. Doesn't mean he puts
key moments.
Yeah, in key moments with the biggest lights, the brightest lights. But it doesn't mean that he's one of the top receivers. I mean, I don't think he has reached 1,000 yards yet in his career as a wide receiver. I'm almost positive of that.
Thomas,
actually.
I know you know this off the top of your head.
Thomas, anyway.
Thomas knows. He doesn't want to.
He's busy.
On
the air. But the point is that I think this is a fair contract, and I think that's why there was no beef as far as getting this contract, because the Patriots know what's fair. He's got two
seasons over 1,000 yards.
Okay, two seasons. Yeah, and he's been in the league for almost 10 years. So I think this is very fair for Mr. Edelman.
This, in a lot of ways, is kind of like asking the Bumgarner question to a certain extent, because if you're paying the Julian Edelman that always shows up in the Super Bowl, you'd pay him almost anything, right? Because he's
right,
like the best player in the league on Super Bowl Sunday. But the rest of the year, he's kind of an ordinary receiver. So there's something to be said for, you know, his contract. But I think he could make more, and I think he's just, you know, fine with making what he's making so that the Patriots can get him back to another Super Bowl.
All right, let's move on.
Number two.
We talked about Nationals manager Davey Martinez and how his struggling team may turn him into the first fired manager of the 2019 season, but we also said that Mets manager Mickey Callaway is in the exact same situation. But I looked deeper into the numbers, and one thing is different about that situation in New York. The Mets actually had a share of first place 24 games into the season, while the Nationals have only been above 500 one day this season and haven't made it above third place in the NL East. New York media thought the Mets were outperforming, but hoped the winning play would continue, and it hasn't, and the Mets are now four games under 500. So, Tony, so as much positive as the Mets start had, could a hot start be what gets Mickey Callaway fired?
No. Two seasons in a row starting hot and then coming back down in a drastic way could be the reason why Mickey Callaway.
And they started fast last year, too.
They did. They were in first place last year through like 12 games, I believe it was, and then they plummeted and never looked back, and it looks like that's what they're doing. And listen, the Mets are snake bitten, man. They if their pitching isn't injured, Cespedes ends up breaking his ankle, and it's just they got a lot going on. I don't think they again. It starts at the top. When the top is all screwy, the rest of the organization is going to be screwy. So
started from the bottom, now we're here.
It started from the top, now we're here.
Yeah.
And they are in a lot of trouble. I think Mickey Callaway is too.
Sorry, Scrammy.
No, it's all good. Do you think that Mickey Callaway is going to get fired because of the hot start?
No, I think it's going to be just expectations in general that are going to get him fired. And expectations are a manager's worst enemy. Because they picked up Edwin Diaz, the great closer from the Mariners, right? They picked up Robinson Cano. We've already talked about him. He's well past his prime. Todd Frazier's been hurt. They picked up Jed Lowry. He's still yet to play because he's been injured. They've had other injury problems with Carlos Gomez and others. But nobody looks at that when they're looking at a manager. They just look at the fact that, you know, the Mets were supposed to win 85, 90 games this year, and they're going to come nowhere close to that, so we got to fire the manager. It's expectations that will get him fired, and I think Dave Martinez is another guy that has to be, you know, that seat's got to be really warm. Again, because last year they were so, they fell so far short, Washington did, and they're falling even further short this year.
All right, let's go to the final one.
Number one.
We talked about it yesterday. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers and defensive tackle Gerald McCoy have agreed to part ways after nine seasons with the team. Well, they have found his replacement.
Chris's No, they have not.
Chris's favorite player in the NFL, and Ndamukong Suh has signed with the Buccaneers to replace him. So, Chris, do you think this is a money move, or do you think he is choosing the Bucs because they are going to be more competitive in 2019?
I don't know.
Change the question?
Yeah.
Yes.
What's what was the original question?
It was all about Gerald McCoy, but then the Ndamukong Suh news broke, so I changed it.
Well,
you're better off with the first one.
I mean,
okay, let's go with the first one.
Yeah, what's the first one?
Okay, Tampa Bay Buccaneers, he was ranked, Gerald McCoy was ranked 28th best defensive lineman in the NFL last year, according to Pro Football Focus.
Oh, whatever. I don't buy any of that crap.
21st best in 2017. So, Chris, do you think the 31-year-old Gerald McCoy is still a top defensive lineman in the league right now?
Maybe not a top, but Gerald McCoy knows his way around a defensive line. I'm a big Gerald McCoy fan. I know Tony is. I'd want him on my roster somewhere. Maybe not for top dollar, but I'd want him on my roster. And you know how I feel about Sue. I don't. What did they pay to put him on their roster? Did they have to pay?
I don't
pay
think
like,
it was that much.
Yeah. See, if you don't have to pay too much, that's fine because you're not going to get very much from him.
It's a one-year deal.
Yeah.
And I'm not seeing any. I haven't seen any money numbers yet.
I just don't think Sue's. I think Sue's one of the most overrated players in the history of the NFL. I know he's one of the most overpaid players in the history of the NFL. That I could guarantee you that. So I don't know. Did the Buccaneers get better on this move? Probably not. I think they just traded about even and cost themselves some money.
Tony, what do you think?
I love Chris's Ndamukong Suh hot takes. They're just
it is funny because it's like he ruined the Dolphins like 9 years ago, and I still am mad about it. Right?
Yeah.
Do I think Gerald is a top defender in the NFL? No, but I think he's a very effective defensive lineman in this league. Still. I have some personal experience with him. I know what the work he puts in. And it's really, for him, it's about staying healthy. He stays healthy. He's very productive. And I think a change of scenery is going to be great for him. You kind of get bogged down going through the same seasons with Tampa where they're supposed to be good and then they don't end up being very good. And I think the change of scenery.
You know where I think Gerald McCoy should go, guys?
The Chargers?
No, the Rams. He ought to take Sue's spot with the Rams. And I'll tell you one thing, that bitch of the Rams would be a whole lot better.
Yeah, I agree. I think he would fit perfectly next to. I mean, who wouldn't want to play Aaron Donald?
Yeah.
He's getting double teamed 70% of the time. So
and we saw how Sue took full advantage of that by making like one tackle a game.
Oh, I had to leave it open for you there. But I think Gerald McCoy still can be a very effective defensive lineman.
Yeah. All right. Good stuff, guys.
That's all for the Big Five from Gwynn and Chris on 97.3 The Fan.
Scraby was spot on today, by the way.
He was. That was the Big Five brought to you by Eco Water Treatment Systems. For anywhere you drink water, your water perfected. Stay hydrated, San Diego. Yeah. Welcome back to Gwynn and Chris. I'm here at Petco Park. Chris is at Intercom Studios. And we are joined by Aztec baseball head coach Mark Martinez. I almost said Dave Martinez, but I know better.
Mark Martinez is better than Dave Martinez.
Yeah, for sure. Joining us on the SDCCU Fan Hotline, Mark, how are you doing? I know you guys are getting ready for this Mountain West Conference Tournament that starts Thursday, number 2 seed. How's everything going?
Well, it's good. You know, I think, you hear the coach speak all the time, you know, it's the second season, right? You know, and so right. You kind of flush everything that's happened in the past and you start concentrating on extending your season, you know, beyond regular season. And, you know, we're fortunate enough to be one of the top, you know, four teams to get in the tournament. Ultimately, we do want to win the regular season championship. We fell short of that. We are the 2 seed and It is the new season. You know, the playoff season starts on Thursday, and you know, we train that way all year long. We try to set up our pitching. We kind of train, you know, to win short series in a tournament atmosphere, and feel like our guys are you know, understanding how important each pitch is and each game is. So we're looking forward to Thursday for sure at 2:00.
I would imagine, Mark, that most of the other teams in the Mountain West Conference have certainly put a bullseye on your guys' back, because you've won this thing 6 of the last 7 years, and you've done it as a 1 seed, a 2 seed. It hasn't really mattered. You guys have been able to really play the best when it counts the most. You don't need to give me any of your secrets, but you just mentioned it. There are some things that you do differently in a tournament setting, and whatever it is, it's worked for you.
Well, you know, I think one of the things we train for, you know, starting in fall is understanding, you know, how short series work and try to train for that, you know. And I think when you look at how our pitching staff lines up, or, you know, how our lineup has evolved throughout the season, and trying to prepare to compete, you know, at a tournament level. And so it's a longer process trying to get our guys' minds right and understanding that. And you know, the excitement does build towards the end of the year in order to try to win the conference regular season. But now, once we understood that, we started to, you know, preparing for the tournament, not know who we were going to play, you know, even as early as last Friday. But, you know, now our guys really understand that everybody's, you know, starts fresh. And we just try to, it sounds so cliche, we do take one day at a time. We treat each day like open day and have that, you know, the excitement, the freshness to it, and try to go through the tournament that way. And it's worked out for us, whether it's through the loser's bracket or the winner's bracket. So we kind of take that mindset moving into this weekend as well.
San Diego State head coach Mark Martinez joins us here on the SDCCU Fan Hotline. Mark, you guys were saddled with some pretty tough injuries early on. I mean, it was from your Friday and Saturday night guys, yet you guys have found a way to find some new arms that stepped up into the fold and have been able to pitch well. Talk a little bit about being able to maneuver the schedule without the guys you anticipated having for Friday and Saturday night.
Well, you know, on paper, going into the season, we were just talking about it earlier this past week, is that on paper, you know, the way we finished the fall with Logan Boyer, Harrison Pyatt, Brad Wegman, you know, you had two seniors and a polished junior, guys that were sitting in the low 90s with you know, wipeout sliders and plus changeups. They could feel their position, and we felt really good about, you know, we could match up with anybody in the country, and this was, you know, a regional tight staff that we could do stuff with. And lo and behold, come the first week of March, we go out and play in an Air Force. It's 19 degrees, and we got two guys go down in that one weekend. Boyer was first, Pyatt was second, and then the following weekend, Wegman comes up with a bum elbow, and now we're sitting here going, okay, now what are we going to do? And what happens is that, you know, guys that were kind of ticketed to pitch out of the bullpen move up, step up, whether it was Justin Goosen Brown or Jacob Flores, Aaron Eden, Michael Paredes, you know, Daniel Richardson. These guys all stepped up, and Adrian Mardueño, who's a national pitcher of the week. We went up and beat Oregon State. Those guys kind of stepped up and got some great in the fire experience right away, and they had to learn, you know, by trial and error, and they took their lumps, and they also embraced their successes, and it's been good. It's been a lot of fun to watch them evolve throughout the season. You don't worry so much about the Goosen Browns or the Adrian Mardueños. Those guys are senior and junior respectively. You kind of worry about those guys that are the younger guys that don't have that experience in Division I baseball. They answered the bell. They've also had that time where, you know, they get a little fatigued physically and mentally, so we try to back off some of their innings moving into the tournament, and we've seen some great things out of those guys in short stints over this past weekend moving into the tournament, so I think they're fresh as well. So that experience they've gotten this year obviously bodes well for the future as well.
Chris, before you ask your question, I just want to say we should congratulate Adrian Mardueno because he was honored here yesterday as one of the many athletes here in San Diego before the Padre game. That was pretty awesome to see.
Yeah, not a bad year, too. 1.48 ERA, win over Oregon State. That's getting it done. And if I remember Adrian Mardueno, he's the guy that runs around and chases down every foul ball that is hit in Tony Gwynn Stadium. He's a bundle of energy. You've got 11 guys that I counted that are from the San Diego area. There's probably a couple more floating around, but I know that that's one of the keys you've had, Mark, to continuing the success that Tony's father started and keeping San Diego State's baseball program on top, and that's keeping kids close to home. And again, you've been able to do that, and you know, this is obviously a very fertile ground for players. So congratulations on doing that, and I know that these kids probably feel a sense of community pride because they're all from here.
Yeah, you know, and again, I think the biggest thing moving – even when I first got here, you know, Tony, you know, said we got to find a way to win San Diego, and that process took a while. You know, I think landing some of the kids and making kids growing up here in San Diego want to come to San Diego State. You know, and I think the winning, you know, having a Strasburg, you know, from San Diego, make his mark on our program, and then you know, it piques interest of kids that are, you know, 13, 14. Even down into, you know, 10, 11, 12-year-olds at that time starting to think, you know, hey, San Diego State's pretty sweet, you know. And so we continue to evolve our recruiting. We want to win San Diego. We want to keep kids in San Diego here at San Diego State. And you mentioned it already. This is a hotbed for baseball. It's one of the most talented areas in the country. And so obviously you want to have the kids that are doing it at the high school level come to your school and help compete for a national championship. And I really believe that's how we're going to do it, is continue to get the top talent to come to San Diego State here from San Diego. And I think at some point we can line them up in Omaha and have the bulk of our roster from San Diego. It'd be a great, great feeling.
Coach Martinez, there's a question I've been dying to ask you. Chris and I have this conversation from time to time. We don't have enough time to get it in, but one of these days we got to get you back on to ask you a little bit about paying student athletes and where you come down. And we don't get a chance to ask coaches about it very much, but you and I had a conversation that leads me to believe that you have an opinion on this. So one of these days we're going to have you back on for it, but I have to ask you about Ty France. I mean, you mentioned having a guy like Steven Strasburg represent the school at the big league level and what that may do. I assume that means the same for a guy like Ty France, who has really come from the 34th round pick to being a big leaguer this year. This has got to help recruiting, I would assume.
Absolutely. What a great story. And even when you just mentioned his name, I got chills. You know, I mean, it's just a great story too. You know, 34th round pick, you know, he's a grinder, a guy that, you know, is a model for really anybody to get that opportunity playing professional baseball. If you have a mindset, if you're going to try and outwork everybody, great things are going to happen. And I think when Ty had that opportunity to go play, you know, in the minor leagues with the Padres, his mindset had always been, and he would tell you, is I'm going to try and just stick to my work. I'm going to trust the process. I'm going to continue to grind it out. And hard work pays off, man. You know, and it doesn't matter if you're a 34th round pick, if you're a first round pick, if you want to be great, you know, he's a great model for that. That you work your tail off, great things are happening, you know, and it's happening for him. And we just have such a sense of pride, you know, every time, you know, I've been to Padre games two of the last 3 days, and it's just such a sense of pride for us to, you know, see him standing out there just warming up. It's just it's so cool to watch him experience that, and hopefully he can stick around for a long, long time and continue to help the Padres win some baseball games and beyond.
It's incredible because I think of Ty France, and what I think of honestly is him just raking the ball all over the field in Reno 4 or 5 years ago when you guys won the tournament championship there. And I know you're going to Reno again this weekend. So, Coach, best of luck. Get it done again. And we'll look forward to talking to you hopefully next week to preview the regional, the NCAA regional, because I know that's the ultimate goal, get back there and win one of those things. So congratulations on a good season, but let's make it a great one.
Outstanding, guys. I appreciate you guys having me on, and hopefully we do have an opportunity to catch up for a regional preview next week, and if not, we can talk about that other subject that Tony was talking about.
Perfect.
I would love to
for
do
sure.
That.
We'll do a whole segment.
Let's anticipate talking about the regional preview with you guys in it.
Yes.
Outstanding. Awesome, guys. Appreciate
good luck,
it.
All right, Mark. Thank you.
Have a great day. Bye.
That was Coach Mark Martinez, San Diego State head baseball coach. Earned 2.5% APY on a 16th-month certificate from SDCCU. Get this amazing rate and start saving at any of the SDCCU's 43 Southern California branch locations today. APY equals annual percentage yield. For details, visit SDCCU.com.
Once a week, Gwen and Chris face their toughest decisions in the world of sports.
Now you have an adult decision to make.
Would you rather starts now.
This is going to be a tough one.
On 97.3 The Fan.
All right, Would You Rather is actually one of the better named segments we have on the program. I think Scraby came up with a pretty good name for this because it actually explains what the segment is. Will Galvez comes to Master Ceremonies, gives Tony and I a couple of choices, and asks us, would you rather? Duh. Thus the name. Will, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing good. It's actually really good to see you. I haven't seen you guys since, I think, last week. You guys have been in that really cold icebox that's known as the press box.
You know what, Tony? I walked into the studio today, and these two comic geniuses, Thomas Andrews and Will Galvez, said that the rumor is going around that you and I are kind of soft because we dress up so warmly in the press box.
Says the guys in a nice, cozy intercom studio.
No doubt. I mean, I try to tell them. I said, you guys, you're welcome to come down someday, but it is just cold right there.
Lucky enough to be invited down here for a game.
Oh,
they can experience the wind chill themselves.
It's cold, guys. I will let you know that it's cold. I was the tough guy back in the studio last season.
And Scraby's got a little extra protection too.
Don't even start with me. I knew where that was going.
Tony and I are in excellent condition. We don't have a lot of extra help there, but Scraby should be warm and cozy.
All right,
he's still not.
All right, corn on the cob.
All right. The Warriors are headed to their fifth straight appearance in the NBA Finals, which is an extremely impressive feat. And this hasn't been replicated since the Boston Celtics did it 10 times in a row from 1957 to 1966. So this naturally made me think, and Chris, since you're in the studio, I'll have you lead off. Which player would you rather build a dynasty around? Bill Russell or Steph Curry?
Haha.
And it is, I would say it's argumentative that both players have changed the landscape of the NBA.
Yeah, it's a very, very good question, and it sounds like an easy answer to most of the people in the last three generations. They would go with Steph Curry in a heartbeat. But Bill Russell is considered the greatest winner in the history, not only of basketball, but in all of sports. Has more rings than anybody to prove it. Had to one-on-one basically defeat Wilt Chamberlain, the greatest force in the history of sports, every single year to win his championship. But Steph Curry has also changed the game of basketball. This is one of your better questions. I'm going to be wrong no matter which way I go here. So I'm going to go with Bill Russell and just say that I could find a bunch of other guys around him. But God, I'd hate to pass on Steph Curry if I had the chance.
So Chris is taking the 11th time. He has, I think, 11 rings.
Yeah.
That is insane.
And a couple of NCAA championships, too, when he was at USF. So he's just nothing but a winner every single time, everywhere he ever went. But Steph Curry
He's the greatest San Francisco Don that's ever donned the uniform.
Thanks for joining us, Gravy.
All right, Tony. Who would you rather build a dynasty around, Bill Russell or Steph Curry?
Bill Russell. And I think ultimately, when it's all said and done, Bill Russell will have a longer run of greatness, which gives me a shot at more titles. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, don't get me wrong, what Steph Curry has done in his career thus far has been amazing. He's probably already a Hall of Famer. No, not probably. He is a Hall of Famer already, I would say. But I just think Bill Russell's run will never be broken. And that's why you play the game, is to win championships, to be number one. And I don't think Steph is going to get there.
The only thing that I would say in defense of Steph Curry, and I also picked Bill Russell, was that when the Celtics won their championships, they only like one round of the playoffs. Like, you played the season, then he played against Wilt, and then he beat Wilt, and he was the champ, which was hard enough to do. But Steph Curry's had to do this through 3-4 rounds of playoffs every single time, basically play 110 games a season. More challenges, more opportunities to fail, and yet has still come through. He's one Kyrie Irving three-pointer away from going after his fifth straight title, which at this point in time would be even more remarkable than what the Celtics accomplished, I think.
I would argue you can do that both ways. Steph Curry is playing in the era of no touching at all.
Good point.
Well, just to solidify that point, or what you guys both agreed on, the NBA Finals Most Valuable Player Award is named after Mr. Bill Russell. So,
yeah.
I mean, that just goes to show.
That's just because he was first. That's all.
All right.
You can always change it.
Next one. Huge shout out to War of Will. Chris, I did hear you yesterday talking about that at the end of the show.
Yes, your horse. Did you win any money?
I did bet, and I won some money on
it. All right.
I won't disclose how much over the air. Off the air, I'll tell you guys.
Way to go, though.
$10. $10.
Hey, that was a win's a win, man.
As usual, Scraby's being a hater, but I'm going to move on. It was a remarkable bounce back considering what happened at the Kentucky Derby. So, the calendar month of May revolves around horse racing and playoff hockey. Game 6, by the way, between the St. Louis Blues and San Jose Sharks is tonight. The Blues are up 3-2. So, Chris, would you rather attend one of the Triple Crown races in a box suite or, for the sake of this segment, a Game 7 of a Western Conference or Stanley Cup Finals game?
Well, if it's going to be just a Game 7 of any Western Conference final game, I'm going to choose the Preakness or a Triple Crown race in a box. Because the box comes with free food, normally. That's one key. Secondly, I have attended one Triple Crown race. I went to the Belmont once, Ooh. And it is special. It is fun. I wasn't in a suite or anything, but it was fun to be there. It's very historic. Game 7 of the playoffs is, I mean, intense as you can get, and that's what I love about hockey. But unless my favorite team was playing, which is the Blackhawks, I wouldn't have the same interest necessarily as I would in being at the Kentucky. The Kentucky Derby is on my bucket list, and I have not been there, so I would like to do that. I think I would pick that.
Okay. Tony?
Give me the whole question again.
So, would you rather attend a Triple Crown race, the Kentucky Derby, the Preakness Stakes, or the Belmont Stakes, in a box suite, there, or a Game 7 of the Western Conference or Stanley Cup Finals in hockey?
Yeah, give me a Western Conference Final or Stanley Cup Final in hockey.
Okay.
I've played baseball for as long as I can remember. I've been in clubhouse as long as I can remember, and watching the Preakness and the Kentucky Derby has always been a tradition in locker rooms. But for the life of me, I cannot understand why people like watching horses race. It is not exciting to me at all. So for that reason, just give me the intensity of a Western Conference Final or a Stanley Cup Final.
But when War of Will came down the stretch the other day, carrying your money with him, Will.
Yes.
Pretty exciting, right?
Well, I mean, during the Kentucky Derby, I might or might not have been screaming at a bar that I was watching it at.
I might or might not have.
Well, he was the one who got cut off in the Kentucky Derby. That's the irony, was that he was the horse that he didn't cause the problem, but he got cut off, which led to the other horse being named the winner after 3 or 4 days. But War of Will, give him credit, he bounced back and took the Preakness. So.
I was super pumped. I was super pumped. And it was just, it has my name in it. That's a great
No, that's
point.
Cool you to have a horse it. Win with your name. That's
it has
cool.
my name in it.
It does. Very cool.
All right. So today the NBA All-Rookie Team was named. And it was interesting. I'm sure you guys have heard of it. The top 5 draft picks from last year's draft were composed of the team. So the Atlanta Hawks guard Trae Young and Dallas Mavericks point guard and small forward Luka Doncic were unanimous selections. So based off the rookie years, I get it. It's a small sample size. Who would you want on your team for the next 5 years? Trey or Luka? Chris?
I'm going to let Tony go first. He's the NBA expert on this.
Tony?
I'm taking Trey Young.
Ooh, okay.
And here's why. Luka has a lot of basketball miles on him already.
Mm-hmm.
He's been in Europe playing, which is considered the second best competition in the world underneath the NBA. He played in that league. He's been in there for like 3 years. And so, of course, he comes to the league like fully ready to play because technically he's not really a rookie. He already's been playing against grown men for, you know, the last 2 years of his life. So I like Trae Young a lot. I think he's more indicative of the NBA today mm-hmm. than Luka is. And I just think he's going to have more mileage on him when it's all said and done.
I got to agree. Trey has a higher ceiling, so Tony's going with Trey Young. Chris, how about you? Luka Doncic or Trey Young?
I'm going with Trey Young also, but I'm asking him to shave the mustache.
Oh, please.
Not a mustache guy. Okay.
That drives me crazy. I hate to say it. I'm not a fan. But Trey Young is as close, you know, for a young player, a rookie player. He's as close. We just talked about Steph Curry. He's as close as it comes. I think right now.
Yep.
I mean, with a guy that's able to just create his own, get the shot off quickly, put up points in bunches, Doncic might be the better all-around player at the moment, but I think Trae Young will grow into that. So it's a close one because Doncic is awfully good, but I'll go Trae Young also.
Yeah, Tony, you made a good point about the mileage. I mean, because the entire basketball season, all we heard about was Luka Doncic and not much about Trae Young, and then he kind of caught fire towards the end. So that'll be interesting to see as we progress.
You know what it's like? I can't remember who he had on, and he brought up such a good point when we asked him about it. It was kind of like the whole now I'm drawing a blank. Like James Harden. Like mm-hmm. James Harden and Giannis, right?
Mm-hmm.
Can't remember who it was, but they had Giannis as the MVP because he did it from start to finish, much like Luka did it from start to finish. The two guys, Trae Young in the Rookie of the Year race, he kind of picked up like towards the All-Star break.
Yeah.
And he played at a higher level for the rest of the season, but I think you got to give it to the guy who goes from start to finish, I mean, as far as Rookie of the Year is concerned. But
yeah, I think Doncic will win the Rookie of the Year.
Yeah.
And I think Michael Lee of The Athletic said that.
That's who it was. It was Michael Lee.
Smart man.
All right. We'll end on this one. Which MLB record would you rather see a Padres player break more? Hitting 74 home runs, which would break Barry Bonds' home run record of 73.
Oh, man.
Or pitching,
pick up the pace.
Or pitching 60 straight scoreless innings, which would break Oral Hershiser's record of 59 scoreless innings. Tony?
Ooh, good one.
I would rather see 60 consecutive scoreless innings. And I say that because it parallels with what the Padres would probably need more of as far as if they're going to go make a playoff run or get to the playoffs. It's more likely that they'll need a 60 consecutive innings scoreless than they would 74 home runs.
60 scoreless innings. I couldn't even imagine that.
I can't either.
That would be total dominance. Chris, how about you? Which record would you rather see a Padres player break?
Well, you're asking me basically if I'd rather root for Chris Paddock or rather Franmil Reyes, because those are the two guys that are going to do this kind of thing. I think the 60 innings in a row would be way better for the team. It would probably help them win at least 10 games there easily and maybe more. But I got to be honest with you. If some guy made a run with 74 home runs, this would be going on every at bat all season long for an entire summer. Every time this player, in this case, I'm thinking Franmil Reyes, came to bat, and to have everybody rooting for this guy and people around the country watching, I think it'd be one of the most exciting things you could possibly ever see in sports. So I'm going to say that in this particular question, I would rather see the run at the 74 home runs by Franmil Reyes, who's just continues to make me smile every time he comes to the plate.
I could definitely see it. All right, guys, Well, thanks for playing.
That's a wrap for Would You Rather on 97.3 The Fan.